This is a recording of the Manuel Perez Conference with Erstat on Thursday, February 20th, 2020 at 10 a.m. Central Time. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome everyone to Crédito Real's fourth quarter 2019 earnings conference call. Crédito Real issued its quarterly report on Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact us in Mexico City at +52 55 52 28 97 53. It is important to note that the presentation and MP3 recordings referred to in this call will be available at www.creal.mx. Before we begin the call today, I would like to remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements on Crédito Real's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement. With us this morning from Crédito Real is Mr. Carlos Ochoa, Deputy CEO. He will be discussing the more important strategic, financial, and operating aspects of the fourth quarter 2019. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Ochoa. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I am happy to share another year of positive results as Crédito Real posted solid portfolio dynamics across all its business segments and geographies during 2019, enabling us to achieve a 29.3% growth rate in consolidated terms, about 20% the target as set at our guidance, and a stable bottom-line results. As we decided to privilege asset quality and liquidity in year 2019, looking for the greater benefit towards the medium and long run rather than synthetically stimulate short-term results. At the same time, as of December 31st, 2019, we already served over 916,000 clients across Mexico, the United States, and Central America, compared to almost 852,000 a year ago, thus paving the way for beating the iconic 1 million mark. This performance becomes more significant when we realize the softer macroeconomic conditions prevailing in Mexico, our main market, and the political unrest in Nicaragua. As we have seen consistently throughout 2019, our resilient operations in Mexico, combined with a more stable and cost-efficient structure of the international businesses, contributed meaningfully to bring forth additional drivers of sustained growth. In this regard, it is worth noting that, as of quarter end, the contribution of international businesses to both consolidated loan portfolio and net interest margin stood at 21% and 47% respectively, in line with our diversification targets. Before going further on the analysis of our performance by geography and business segment, allow me to take you through some significant milestones achieved in 2019. First, pursuant to our commitment for delivering incremental value to our investors, we canceled over 12 million shares, equivalent to 3.2% of the outstanding stock in year 2019, ending with 379.7 million shares outstanding. Drawing on an ambitious 8.5 billion pesos buyback program, while paid over 266 million pesos in cash dividends, the highest distribution ever made in Crédito Real's history. Second, through the international offering of 350 million euros senior notes due 2027, we became the first Mexican non-financial institution to issue euro-denominated debt and the only high-yield Latin American company to perform this type of issuances in the last 5 years. This transaction was particularly significant as it enabled us not only to push forward our funding strategy, but also to strengthen our investor base as we were able to attract lucrative institutional investors lured by our differentiated value proposal and our financial inclusion. Lastly, we held our first ever investor day in New York City, where I and other senior officers had the pleasure to meet, listen, and to speak with our share and stakeholders. In this space, We were also able to gather very valuable feedback to better align our core strategies and overall business plan to our shareholders' interests going forward. Turning to the business segment development, in Mexico, our operations showed wider stability in terms of loan origination across all credit portfolio, despite a lower economic activity, which certainly led us to adopt a conservative approach to guarantee the asset quality preservation. In the case of payroll, origination normalization advances, as this quarter contraction was around 5% after reaching double-digit rates of decline in the previous quarters, as we started to regain traction in the addition of clients with solid credit profiles in our target markets. On the other hand, origination growth rates in the SME segment kept its strong pace, increasing 1.5 times year-over-year this quarter at the back of the success achieved by our comprehensive offering. Consequently, we feel confident to capitalize on the vastly underserved base of potential customers. In this regard, we have recently arranged a credit facility with the IDB Invest for $50 million, seeking to originate incremental credit for the entrepreneur women of Mexico. Likewise, it is relevant to underscore the increasing participation of SMEs in our consolidated loan portfolio since the introduction of the pure lending product in 2018. To put that in perspective, SMEs' loan portfolio accounted for only 10% of the consolidated loan portfolio at 4Q18, compared to approximately 16% as of year end 2019. On the used car business in Mexico, origination momentum continues, fueled by the demand surge for pre-owned cars. Wrapping up, our loan portfolio in Mexico stood above the 37 billion pesos mark, 27% more than that of the same period last year. Meanwhile, its non-performing loan ratio stood at 1%, its lowest mark in 5 years, posting sequential and annual improvements of 30 and 10 basis points, respectively, as we continue succeeding in the implementation of a smart origination standard. Moving to our international businesses, the turnaround that started in the United States last year continues to show positive results, as Crédito Real USA reported a solid quarter with a loan origination growth of 1.7 times, delinquency improving to 0.9% from 1.1% as of year-end 2018, alongside a positive generation of cash. This performance was driven by the efforts oriented to stimulate cross-selling and consolidate the commercial structure of higher penetration among the Hispanic population. On Central America, we continue seeing a further recovery in line with a more stable environment as loan origination dynamics remain positive. In this segment, we posted a double-digit growth rate and a non-performing loan ratio improvement, which allowed us to attain a quarterly net income of approximately 110 million pesos. Now, I would like to take a moment to walk you through some relevant achievements that positively impacted the balance sheet. As I mentioned earlier, we signed a $50 million credit line with the IDB Invest, our current cheapest source of funding, allowing us to improve our debt mix. In this end, it is important to underscore our keen interest to increase the participation of this type of financing going forward, as we seek to tap into the attractive conditions offered by development banks. Additionally, we successfully completed the issuance of 750 million pesos local notes under our portfolio securitization program. The aforementioned, coupled with the record collection registered in December, contributed to bolstering liquidity as shown by our cash balance that as of the year-end surpasses the 1 billion pesos mark. Likewise, seeking to channel all possible resources toward the businesses that best fit our profitability standards, we reduced our stake in Resuelve. It is important to clarify that this action will not take any toll to our consolidated resources and will allow us to maximize the use of resources for our strategic assets. All in all, we head into 2020 on a solid footing as the foundations we have laid out in the last decade have resulted in a resilient and flexible platform capable of facing tougher and increasingly complex challenges, and confident to reach positive results, drawing on our compact but efficient structure and our solid financial position, which will allow us to tap into the favorable environment of interest rates that follows the easing cycle started by central banks in North America. In this context, for our 2020 guidance, we set a 15 to 20% growth target for our consolidated loan portfolio and a double-digit net income growth. On a final note, I would like to express my gratitude to our customers, partners, associates, and shareholders who helped us achieve another successful year in our crusade to provide accessible credit products for the underserved segments of the population. Moving to discuss our financials in greater detail, during the fourth quarter of 2019, interest income totaled 3.3 billion pesos. That's over 20% more than that of the same period last year, as a result of the fall of the strong growth registered in the consolidated loan portfolio. For the full year 2019, interest income increased 17%, reaching 11.9 billion pesos. Interest expense recorded 1.3 billion pesos, an annual increase of 619 million pesos, roughly 89%, mainly derived from the company's larger indebtedness. For the year 2019, interest expense amounted 4.7 billion pesos, up nearly 50% on a year-over-year basis. So secondly, financial margin was about 2 billion pesos for the fourth quarter, down 3% or 61 million pesos when compared to that of the last year. This variation is explained by a non-recurring effect associated to the liability management exercise that we performed in the quarter, higher debt costs, and changes in the product mix from the addition of the above average quality assets. 2019 financial margin totaled 7.3 billion pesos, an increase of 2.6% when compared to year 2018. Net provisions for loan losses, including the recovery of charge-off accounts as requested by the CNBV, was 350 million pesos, decreasing 32 million pesos or 8.3% on an annual basis, reflecting an overall improvement in delinquency levels. The annual figure for this P&L item attained about 1.3 billion pesos, contracting 15.2% against 2018. The coverage ratio stood close to 220 compared to 178.8 and 173% in the previous quarter of the same period in the last couple of years, reflecting the ongoing improvements of the asset quality. Administrative and promotion expenses summed up 972 million pesos, increasing 193 million pesos or 24.8% against the figure recorded in the same period last year, explained by portfolio growth-related expenses and debt issuances costs. 2019 administrative and promotion expenses rose 3.6%, totaling 3.6 billion pesos. It is important to mention that during the quarter, a non-recurring expense for 143 million pesos was recorded, following the premium paid for the senior notes 2023 tender offer as a result of the liability management of the euro-denominated senior notes. Consequently, net income amounted to 427 million pesos. Excluding this non-recurring effect, comparable net income rose to 570 million pesos. Return on average equity stood at 12.3% in 2019, while excluding the perpetual notes premium, this metric stood at 16.6%. On the other end, return on average assets was 3.6%. Capitalization ratio contracted by 970 basis points on a year-over-year basis, standing at 34.2% in 2019. The average cost of funds remained flat on a sequential basis at 13.3% as a result of lower borrowing costs associated to the credit facilities arranged over the past month and recent reference rate cuts. And in a normalized basis, lies below the 12.5% mark. For the year 2020, we anticipate a stable funding cost and foreseeing arising opportunities from more competitive reference rates. Turning to the loan portfolio performance, consolidated loan portfolio totaled 46.9 billion pesos as of quarter end on an annual growth of 29.3%, fueled by an overall positive performance of our businesses segment, outstanding SMEs, and the United States businesses. Consolidated small and medium-sized enterprises portfolio reached 7.4 billion pesos, increasing 103% year-over-year, driven by a strong demand for our credit solutions, especially leasing. And, as I just mentioned earlier, the participation of this segment in the consolidated portfolio has solidly increased, improving our product mix. Payroll portfolio amounted to 28.2 billion pesos, up 13.8% when compared to the 24.8 billion pesos recorded in 2018. Here, it is important to mention that our growth trend has started to surge during the fourth quarter and possibly gain further traction in the periods to come. As for the used car business in Mexico, this amounted to 1.4 billion pesos, up 52.7% versus year-over-year, in consonance with a growing demand. In the United States run, our portfolio reached 4.1 billion pesos, 101% year-over-year growth, highly contributing to our consolidated portfolio expansion and financial margin growth. In that regard, we have grounds to expect resilient dynamics in this segment towards 2020, as the prospects of economic activity seem stable, drawing from a controlled inflation, lower interest rates, and lesser uncertainty given the USMCA approval by both the President and Congress of both countries, United States and Mexico. Meanwhile, Instacredit's loan portfolio reached 4.9 billion pesos, a year-over-year growth of 10.2%, mainly derived from the ongoing implementation of initiatives aimed at consolidating wider resiliency and efficiency coupled with a more stable environment. At the light of these developments, it is important to state that we are heavily carrying our origination standards as we seek to preserve our asset quality and financial resources. Therefore, the consolidated non-performing loan ratio declined to 1.3% from that of 1.7% in the fourth quarter of 2018. Now, turning to the balance sheet. As of December 31st, 2019, total assets increased 24.3% or 12 billion when compared to that of the same period of 2018 to reach 61.6 billion pesos, driven by the achieved growth in the consolidated loan portfolio and a wider base of funding sources. Outstanding debt totaled 41.5 billion pesos, up 35.5% or 10.9 billion pesos when compared to last year's, primarily attributed to the placement of the senior notes due 2027, the issuance of local notes, and the arrangements of different bank loans, including the IDB Invest credit line. Here, it is important to mention that given our success in international debt placement, solid rock of origination standards, and a record high collection in December, our cash level surpassed with the 1 billion pesos mark, bringing forth a strong financial position to start year 2020. Last, but definitely not least, as of year end, the stockholders' equity totaled 16 billion pesos, an annual increase of almost 1% or 120 million pesos, following the already discussed factors and the cancellation of the stock that we just mentioned earlier. With this, I conclude my remarks. And now, let me turn back the call on the operator to open the line for Q&A.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, star 1 to ask a question now. Our first question comes from Ernesto Gabilondo with Bank of America.
Hi, good morning, Carlos. Thanks for the opportunity. I have a couple of questions. On the first one, you expect now that earnings should be meaningfully improving in 2020. As you mentioned, you have improved your loan mix. You should start to see funding costs declining, and probably you should maintain OPEX and asset quality under control. So can you elaborate on your expectations for NIM, cost of risk, and OPEX growth in 2020? And then for my second question, we have seen you have been reducing your participation in Resuelve tu Deuda. So how should we think about growth in net fees going forward? Thank you.
Hello, Ernesto. Thank you for participating in the conference. When it comes to the net income, to tell you the truth, we are optimistic. I mean, on the one hand, I mean, our view in terms of cost of funds is that the worst has passed, and that happened in 2019. And in that sense, our view for the remaining of the year is that if the cost of funds at the end of the year remains in a range of 12.3 to 12.5, which seems something very attainable, that should be helping us in terms of the NIM to start trending upwards from the 17% to something closer to the 18%. So as long as the NIM in general terms trends above the 18% mark, I would say that the, in terms of net income, we could easily be surpassing whatever we did during this year. But if you think about the net income this year, and you know, excluding the non-recurrent items, this was an extraordinarily good quarter. So we would expect, in general terms, to attain at least double-digit growth for the remaining of the year. Something definitely above the double-digit growth. That's our view in terms of the net income. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, yes, and just in terms of OPEX and asset quality for getting this at least double-digit growth.
Yes, I mean, if you look at one of the good things, I mean, a lot of people asked us when, you know, about the way we are growing the SME portfolio. However, one of the very good things about that one not only comes from the growing part, but also in terms of the asset quality, especially because if you think about our business model, which relies heavily in cross-selling and on recurring customers, and with higher average ticket size, that helps us a lot in terms of the cost of risk. So our view in terms of the SMEs business is that we are not compromising profitability due to product mix because a much lower cost of risk. That's definitely our view. We don't expect, you know, on the other hand, we don't have to expect changes in the asset quality. I mean, if the NPLs remain something around the 1.5% range, we definitely will be satisfied at the end of the year. But that's definitely what we are doing. On the other hand, one of the things that we are trying to do for this year is that if you think that out of the total liabilities of the company, only 5% or not even 5% comes from development agencies. What we intend to do is to increase this portion of funding to at least for the 10%, and that should definitely have a positive effect on that, on the cost of funds overall. Having said that, I mean, similar to the IDB line, I mean, what we intend to do is to increase the line with that NAPIN, which has already been approved, and moving forward in that regard. And that, you know, the combination of these new facilities could definitely help us to improve profitability for the SMEs business overall.
Okay.
So, your second question.
Yes.
No. Absolutely.
No, so just wondering, from what you mentioned, that you will be growing SME, but with good asset quality. So overall, we should expect, as you mentioned, NPLs to remain stable. And should we expect the same for the cost of risk?
Yes. I mean, we're, right now, if you look at where the cost of risk stands, I mean, at 3.5, I mean, at the, yeah, sorry, at the, I have the figure over here, at the 3% range, where for the year was the 2.8% mark, that's a very healthy cost of risk. I mean, our target will be, you know, our target these days is focusing heavily on collection, focusing heavily in terms of asset quality, and I think that the cost of risk should be stable, should remain stable within this range. I mean, we feel comfortable with those figures, and we believe that that's something that that's sustainable.
Okay, perfect. And then, yes, my second question.
Yes, when it comes to Resuelve, I mean, basically what we are doing, I mean, and that's something that we, that both Angel and I have talked to many of you in the past months. I mean, what the company intends to do is to, you know, invest as if it was our last million. And by saying that is that we are focusing on protecting the NIM overall and only in the most relevant and most productive assets that we have. So consistent with that, basically the consistent with that was the initiative to, you know, to sell a small portion of the participation of the Resuelve. And as for what we would expect, I mean, given that we are not going to be consolidating anymore that one, in terms of the line of commissions and fees collected, which was mainly Resuelve, that, well, for the next year is not going to be as relevant. It used to be something around the 100 million mark, so 100 million per quarter. That was what happened in the past. And probably should remain something in more, something, I don't know, 400 million roughly, less for the full year. But in any case, we will be, you know, compensating that income in the other line.
Can you repeat again how much?
100 million. That was roughly, I mean, what we used to what we used in the commissions and fees collected line on the per quarter was roughly 100 million per quarter.
And now?
So, given that we are not going to be consolidating Resuelve, you won't be seeing that figure again.
But you got enough, something around 30 million per quarter?
Excuse me?
It's
probably going to be something around the, I don't know, it's going to be something around the 20 or something within that range. It's not material, I mean, because it's worth to emphasize at this point that we do not rely on commissions or we do not charge commissions or things like that in most of the products over here in Mexico, whereas in other places, I mean, we might be charging something, you know, a small fee. So that's probably the only thing that you will be seeing. Something around, I don't know, probably 20, 30 million pesos per quarter.
Perfect. Understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ernesto.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carlos Rivera with Barclays.
Hi. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for the presentation. My first question is regarding the loan growth for this year. You share your expectation of between 15 to 20. So if you could give us a little bit more color here in terms of growth by segment, particularly the SME portion has been growing pretty fast. And I remember from the Crédito Real Day in New York that you mentioned a target of about between 15 to 20% of your portfolio there. I think you're already there, 16% in Mexico, 4% in the U.S. So what are you thinking for each segment, and what are the implications for the funding needs of 2020, in particular if you are thinking about any bond issuance in addition to increasing the lines from the development banks that you mentioned? That will be my first question, and I'll ask the second one after. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, Carlos. I mean, when it comes to the SMEs, yes, I mean, what we liked a lot about the SMEs is the asset quality. You know, the improvement that we get on the cost of risk, on the consolidated cost of risk, given the much larger average ticket size that we have on that business. So, like that, you know, by increasing the participation of the SMEs, somehow put some pressure on the yield. On the other hand, releases a lot on the in terms of the cost of risk. So that's what we like. However, I mean, what we see, and consistent to what we said over there in the Crédito Real Day while in New York, Yes, it should remain something around the 15, probably to the 20%, but that's going to depend also in terms of the funding that we might get from the development agencies. I'm sorry, I'm listening a lot of noise on the line, operator. Do you know?
Yes, sir. That's coming from Mr. Rivera's background.
Okay. Going back to the question is, if at some point we increase the funding from development agencies, that should help us in terms of growing the SME's portfolio and also to improve the profitability for those products. So that would be the only case in which the SME's business should grow above the 20% mark, but as I stated at the beginning, we don't see that happening. It's probably going to remain within this range of the 16%, 15-17% overall.
Okay, and in terms of the implications for funding for 2020, any color there?
Yes, I mean, what we intend to do is that we intend to tap the Swiss market. We intend to tap the Swiss market next year, next week, and if we are successful in that one, probably we won't be needing any money for the first half of the year. And for the second half, it's going to depend on market conditions, definitely, and it's going to depend on whether we expect to do something on the liability management front. But at this point, we are focusing our efforts on tapping the Swiss market next week.
Okay. Great. And my second question is going to be on the SME portfolio, and particularly that you mentioned the low cost of risk there. If you could share with us your cost of risk for SMEs, making sure, I mean, the NPL ratio there is pretty low, 0.5%. It's even very low when compared to other peers that are focused on SME leasing. So I just want to make sure that this low ratio is true to this level and it is not distorted by any other effect like the strong growth of the denominator on that ratio, or make sure that on the accounting side that if a credit becomes overdue, if you are registering the full outstanding balance of a client that becomes overdue as NPL, or if it's only the portion that is overdue. So just making sure that the asset quality is not distorted by any other factor. Thank you.
Yeah. It makes sense. Your question, it makes sense a lot. First, you have to think about our business model. You know, how we started the business in the SMEs front, that was 5 years ago. And basically the business model consisted in, you know, we relied on a relatively customer base, and it continues to be the case. I mean, if you look at the line of the number of customers that we have on the SMEs, are not even 1,000 of them. So basically, we have a very recurrent customer base. It's about 75% of our customers are recurrent. So what we started to do in the last couple of years with the leasing product is adding new products, you know, in order to, you know, to increase the cross-selling opportunities to these same customer base. I mean, we saw a very attractive opportunity in the leasing business to do some cross-selling, and something similar to that is with the factoring business. So that's basically what we've been doing. And also, when it comes to new customers, it's also important to mention that the approval rates are very low. The approval rates in that business here on the Mexico front are something around 25 to 30%, not even 30%. And basically what that translates into is that we are cherry-picking customers. So we do not see changes in terms of the asset quality. And when it comes to the NPL definition that we use, not only for this product, but for all the products, is consistent all across the board, and it's consistent with the CNBV, with the Mexican regulator, meaning that if the NPL definition that we use all across the board is 90 to 180 days, and we charge it off at the 180 per day, and it amounts for the full loan. So basically that's how it works, And when it comes to the provisioning, well, the provisioning is based on expected losses. The provisioning are based on expected losses consistent with the CMBB requirements.
Okay. And what is about the run rate for that provisioning for the portfolio?
What is, excuse me?
So what is the level of loan loss provisions as a percentage of loans that is going on the SME portfolio about
now? I can give you the figure. Give me a sec. I can give you the figure for that one. You have on the earnings release, and that amounts for 80, close to 85 million as of the end of the quarter, and for the full year amounts for about 130 million for the full year.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you very much, Carlos.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nicolas Arriva with Bank of America.
Yeah, thanks, Carlos, for taking my question. Just one question, which is a bit of a follow-up on the prior question on liability management. If I look at it, I'm specifically looking at some of your bonds. If I look at the 2023s, they're trading basically to call in July of this year. You mentioned you're going to be looking to tap the Swiss market next week, and with that probably done in terms of new issuance for the first half of this year. For the 26s, we have seen a lot of other non-bank financials doing tender offer on some of these bonds and issuing new longer-dated bonds. Does it make sense to think of you calling the 23s in July and potentially doing a tender offer on the 26s? And then on the perps, I would put it, I would assume that one is only going to be called in 2022, given that it counts as equity for accounting purposes and also partially as equity for the rating agencies. But what are your thoughts in terms of these bonds, in terms of liability management? Thanks.
Look, I mean, we are limited. When it comes to the liability management, if we think that for this year we will be focusing a lot in terms of our profitability, when you have a bond trading at 117, such as the 2026, well, thinking about, liability management for that one, it sounds kind of expensive, right? So in that sense, we might be thinking to do something about the 2023s or something, but that's not sure at this point. Basically, the view that we have when it comes to tapping the markets, either of the markets, is more in terms of refinancing rather in terms of issuing. So basically what I'm trying to say is that we feel comfortable, if you look at the form that our debt profile is taking these days, if we feel comfortable, by having 400 million outstanding facilities and not much larger than that, because we are thinking that it's a much more cautious approach to compare to what we did in the past, for example, the 625 million of the 2023s, that sounds, complicated for refinancing these days. So basically that's going to be our view, but for these years, whatever we intend to do in terms of liability management is going to be limited, for on the effect that has on the P&L, basically.
Okay, so it's fair to say that the 23s would be the priority for liability management this year.
Yes, most likely. However, we already did a liability management of those a couple of months ago, so yeah, in any case, I think that if something like that happens, that's going to be, on the second half of this year, assuming that market conditions should prevail at the time.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Natalia Zamora with GBM.
Hi, thank you for taking my questions. I have two quick questions. How do you see the portfolio's breakdown going forward? With SMEs gaining relevance within the consolidated portfolio, what do you expect the breakdown to look like in coming years? And for my second question, at the beginning of the call, you mentioned the cancellation of shares. Now that you've canceled that many shares, do you expect to remain as active in terms of buybacks? Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, well, when it comes to the breakdown of the consolidated portfolio, probably the most important, we have two elements. I mean, that could improve the NIM for the SMEs product, could lead to increase the size of that one to probably maximum of 17% or probably something within that range. That's the view. Probably the most interesting parts are going to be on the other front. For example, Central America. InstaCredit was InstaCredit had an extraordinary year. It was an excellent year, especially when you compare it to the previous one, when the 2018. And what we intend to do is to continue, you know, that same to continue the trend for this year. So if at some point the InstaCredit business gains way to become something around the 12%, that's going to help us a lot in terms of profitability. And that's our view, and also to compensate whatever pressure we put on the NIM. So the intention should be, you know, to grow in healthy on the InstaCredit business, to improve the NIM in the SMEs front. And when it comes to the state, it's also very important to mention, I mean, that we finally are making money in the state, and it looks, you know, and it looks very promising, the businesses over there. The SMEs should continue to grow. I mean, we have a really nice business model over there targeting Latin-owned business, and we are confident that at least not for this year, but at least, you know, for the next couple of years, we will attain our targets of the U.S. becoming something around the 30% of the consolidated portfolio. Interestingly as well, it's going to be the payroll portfolio that my view is that it should remain something around the 60%. So basically that's going to be how it works. You have other lines of business such as the used car, but you cannot be very aggressive growing the used car business here in Mexico, and it's something similar to what we do, you know, in the States. So, you know, overall, that would be kind of the what we expect for the business at least in the next couple of years. And overall, I think that if you look at the growth trend, the consolidated growth trend that we've been having over the past 3 years, yes, definitely growing 20% this year is something, you know, doable. And that's our target for this year. And now when it comes to the other one, I mean, if you think of what we intend to do in terms of the buybacks and things like that, I mean, it's basically stating how confident we are on the future of the company. That's at the core of the buyback program of the company. If you look at the figures that we, especially if you look at the resources devoted to the buyback, hasn't been that material. It has been more on the you know, market making front. But definitely, what we believe, our view over here, is that our stock is trading at a huge discount, and if there's something we can make, you know, to enhance that valuation, especially through the buyback front, yes, we would continue to do it, but not without changing, you know, without materially changing what we've done in the past couple of years.
Okay, great. Thank you. Very helpful.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Gilberto Garcia with Barclays.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. You had very strong growth in SMEs during the quarter, record origination for any segment. Can you tell us what drove this performance? Was it that you are extending greater credit to existing customers, or was there any particular new customers with high balances that drove this performance? Thank you.
It can be a mix of them, but in any case, I mean, it's, you know, at the core are the cross-selling opportunities for our customer base. That's at the core of the SMEs business. Yeah, at some point we have rather large operations, not very large, because if you think what limits the SMEs is our cost of funds itself. I mean, if you look that for the past year it was at the above the 13% mark. I mean, how much do you expect to charge you know, when you have such a large, you know, when you have such a large cost of funds. So that definitely limits the type of operations that we serve on the SME front. Probably it's worth mentioning, you know, other than the cross-selling opportunities, is the fact that we have no concentration whatsoever. The only concentrations that we have are geographically, and by geographically I mean, you know, most of our customers, they are in Mexico City or the surroundings and a couple of cities outside. So we have no concentrations in terms of industries. We have no concentration. We have no exposure to federal agencies or government or so on and so forth. So that's basically the our business. And also, it's also important to mention the fact that we acknowledge, as I already mentioned, that the SMEs business is going to remain something around the 15 to 20% at most. So basically, we are acknowledging that this is not going to become our core business. So by saying that, and I want to be emphatic about this one, is because we are not, you know, we are not constrained to continue to grow in that business, and it's just basically, you know, growing in the, you know, with the right risk premium approach, and that's basically what we've been doing for the SMEs business. Did I answer your question?
Our next question comes from Natalia Corfield with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, Carlos. My question is with regards to capitalization. I've seen that you've been very excited about the growth in the SME portfolio, and you've been growing quite a lot. This year was 29%. Next year seems that there's going to be a little bit of a deceleration of 15 to 20%. But I've been looking, like, your capitalization has been declined now for a number of quarters. So I'm wondering, what are you thinking about that, and if rating agencies have spoken to you about this, what are your main thoughts?
Hi, Natalia. Well, first, if you look at the breakdown of the equity, what happened this quarter, the most visible thing about the capitalization for this quarter comes from the hit that we took from the valuation of cash flow hedges. If you look at that figure, that amounts for 708 million, and that's what put some pressure on the capitalization, at least for this quarter. If you ask me, I mean, clearly this is associated to the strong peso that we are seeing, and especially when you see that most of the derivatives, I mean, that we have a very conservative approach to in regard to the hedging, and the effect that conservative approach that we have on the hedging is the pressure over the capitalization or over the equity. So what I'm saying is that if at some point, I mean, I don't know what's your view on the FX for the end of the year, but we believe that for the end of the year the FX should be about 20 pesos per dollar. That should release a lot of the pressure that we are seeing on the capitalization. So basically what I'm saying is that the pressure that you are seeing over the capitalization is mostly attributed not only to the growing in the, you know, in high intensive in terms of capital products such as the SMEs, but it also comes from the FX front that definitely there's not much that we can do on that end, right? So what we would expect, I mean, something that we've been in very close touch with the rating agencies, clearly, because we acknowledge that our rating is a key differentiator. So in that regard, we are, you know, closely looking at the capitalization and closely looking at, you know, how to improve the capitalization. And basically, the view that we have of protecting the NIM overall comes also on that end, you know, because the NIM reflects our capacity to generate equity. So that's what I can tell you, that mostly, I mean, we were hurt for this quarter. We were hurt by the, you know, by the strong peso here in Mexico.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalia.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nick Dimitrov with Morgan Stanley Investments.
Hi, Carlos. Most of my questions have already been answered, but if you don't mind, can you kind of compare and contrast your SME business in Mexico versus the one in the U.S.? You know, you mentioned in Mexico you do a lot of leasing, and there's some factoring, low approval rates, kind of, you know, low cost of risk. How does this relate to your U.S. business?
I would say that the biggest difference between the two of them are the average ticket size. That's definitely for starters. I mean, if you think about our customer base over there in the States are mostly 93% of the customers are Mexican, Hispanics. I mean, the average ticket size is way, way lower. So the way to approach them, I mean, you know, a typical customer over there could be, you know, someone in the food truck industry or something like that in the case of the States. Whereas over here, what we are doing is that, first of all, you have to think that the SMEs are, you know, largely underserved here in Mexico. And for these customers, if you think in terms of average ticket size, I mean, for example, right now with the leasing products involved, they are in the $500,000 range. If you think about someone trying to borrow that amount of money over here, it has to rely on their own personal resources, whereas in the States it's different. So basically that would be, you know, the main difference between the two businesses is that we are targeting different segments of the population. Over there, Hispanics, for the Latino-owned business, whereas over here are, you know, a stable business that pays taxes and that have been on the business for a number of years, and that's basically what we do.
So it's fair to assume then that most of the SME lending that you're doing in the U.S. is driven by leasing, right? Similar
in the U.S.?
To Mexico. Yeah.
Well, yeah, to Mexico? No, not only that, but the thing about if you think about the three products that we grouped on the SMEs portfolio over here in Mexico, you have leasing with duration on the average something around 48 to 50 months, whereas on the other two cases as the credit products here in Mexico are mostly for working capital needs. So in terms of duration, those are, I don't know, probably 6 to 12 months, and that's something similar to what we have in the case of the factoring. I mean, in the case of the factoring, it's much smaller. It's something around 3 months or something like that. So basically, yes, when you think about the avalanche, the outstanding balance in the SMEs business, largely is the SME is the leasing. However, in terms of origination, is not probably the case. I mean, given the differences in the different situations in the three products.
Understood. And just one last question on funding. You know, for a while, you know, you were saying that you have converted your funding to primarily all fixed, right? When we were in the rising interest rate environment. Rates are coming down in Mexico. I think now it's, what, 60% fixed, 40% floating. How do you want to manage it going forward?
Look, I mean, to tell you the truth, if you think about, for example, the last transaction when we printed the euro deal, we printed that one, we fixed that one, we fixed those at 11.33, if I recall correctly. So basically, for a seven-year duration or something like that. So basically, the interest rate, what I'm trying to say is that the interest rate costs were already priced in at the 11.33. So that was the assumption that we made at the time to fix it. Clearly, fixing the rate has another advantage. You know, it reduces volatility both on the equity front as well as on the, P&L. So that's another advantage. If you look at, for example, the $708 million that I mentioned earlier, yeah, a lot of that amounts for the unfixed part of our liabilities. So it's going to be a mix of them. You know, it's going to be a mix. But in any case, we will continue to focus on the, you know, on the most efficient cost of funds and without FX risk. That's basically the rationale behind our decision.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you. Again, to ask a question, star one at any time. Our next question comes from Gilberto Garcia with Barclays.
Hello again. Apologies for before I got disconnected. I had a follow-up question on guidance. Since you had a number of extraordinary items in the quarter and throughout the year, when you talk about double-digit net income growth, are you referring to the reported net income growth or to the adjusted figure?
To the reported net income.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Gilberto.
With no questions in queue, the question and answer session concludes. I'd like to turn it back to our speakers for closing comments.
Well, thank you, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for being in today's conference call. You may now disconnect, and thank you for joining us this morning.